This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and it's Friday, which means it's time to dive beneath the headlines of one of the biggest stories of the week. And today, it is the ongoing saga within the Massachusetts Republican Party. As the Boston Globe reports, the party's treasurer told fellow Republicans this week that he believes the party's chair, Jim Lyons, may have violated state campaign finance law by coordinating with an independent political action committee. Now, that comes in the wake of the news that the party has tens of thousands of dollars in unpaid bills. So let's unpack all of that, what it means for us as a state. To do that, we're going to turn to our expert political panel momentarily, but we want to start with WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Welcome back, Anthony.
Hey, good to be here.
Okay, so this is just the latest kerfuffle in this state Republican Party under Jim Lyons' leadership. Remind us of some of what else has gone on under his two terms.
Well, I mean, the biggest thing that's happened under his two terms is that the state GOP has become a greatly diminished party. It's lost something like 30,000 registered voters. It now represents just 9% of state voters or a number like that. It's lost hundreds of thousands of dollars, dozens of legislative seats on Beacon Hill, where Democrats have supermajorities. The congressional delegation, of course, is all Democratic. After years of Charlie Baker, a moderate Republican, Democrats have retaken the governorship, all of the other constitutional offices. So it's become an increasingly inconsequential party in the state. And now, as you mentioned, it's facing demands for unpaid bills, allegations of campaign finance violations. So, yeah, not a great time for the Mass GOP and its chairman, Jim Lyons.
So it feels like in watching it, and I do want to note, we have repeatedly invited Jim Lyons to appear here on Radio Boston, and he has declined our invitations. We went from a lot of complaints and concerns about political mismanagement. You know, not, for example, just one thing that came up in the last election, not listing candidate Anthony Amore, who was a Republican candidate, on the party's website. This is something different. This is fiscal mismanagement, financial, including this $52,000 invoice. And it's for a contract for opposition research into Maura Healey. We'll come to that in a minute. But let's stay with the money. How much money in general are we talking about? And are you surprised to see these bills unpaid?
Well, according to reporting from the Boston Globe, which has done a great job tracking this story, as of late December, the state GOP owed at least $86,000 to two outside vendors, at least two outside vendors, apparently for election-related services, including that $52,000 invoice from the Sturm Group, which was hired to conduct opposition research into Maura Healey when she was running for governor. And according to documents obtained by the Globe, these bills were late by more than 2 months. So am I surprised? Well, I don't know. I mean, if you're a state party that's almost out of money, it stands to reason that you're going to have trouble paying bills.
So help put this in perspective, Anthony. How bad is it to be almost out of money as a state Republican party or as a state party?
Well, you need money to function. I mean, according to the latest campaign finance report, the party had $135,000 in its state account. That's a pittance. I mean, they have to pay salaries, they have to pay rent, and now they've got $86,000 at least of bills to pay. So you don't have to be a math whiz to sort of do the math and realize that that money isn't going to last very long. They're out of money. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. They're out of money.
All right, so now we've got this moment. January 31st, Jim Lyons running for re-election for a third term. He is being challenged by other members of the party. Money on our minds. Who else is challenging him? And what do the prognosticators think about his likelihood of getting a third term?
I'm less good on that last question. I mean, I can give you some names as to who's running. The morning after the election, Republican State Committee Vice Chair Jay Fleitman announced that he would run for the chairmanship. Another name is in the race is Christopher Lyon. He's a Republican campaign operative. And Amy Carnevale, a Republican State Committee member from Marblehead. As to the prognostications, I mean, I think what's really going to be interesting is this is going to be a race for the future of the GOP, how to rebuild it. And I think one of the central debates is going to be whether to pivot away from Jim Lyons' support for the Trump wing of the party. The formula for success for Republicans in Massachusetts was embodied for 8 years by one guy named Charlie Baker, fiscal conservative, good manager, moderate on social issues. That's a formula that voters across Massachusetts embraced. Lyons has embraced the Trump wing of the party, and that hasn't been a successful in Massachusetts.
All right, just a couple questions left for you. Anthony Brooks, WBUR senior political reporter here. This is a little sound from the Howie Carr Show. He is a talk show host who holds a lot of sway with at least a set of conservatives here in the state. He was one of the first people to start talking about this unpaid bill to the Sturm Group at the beginning of the week. And here is how he talked about Lyons on his show on Tuesday.
So he's begun his defeat tour, his apology tour, going around trying to explain how he's a victim. He's been framed. It's not his fault that he hasn't won a single major election or referendum question, that they've lost multiple county-wide offices, multiple legislative seats in both the House and the Senate. It's nothing is his fault. He's a victim of circumstance. That's all.
So I do want to underscore Scott Lehigh in the print version of the Boston Globe today, writing a commentary after watching one of those meetings, basically saying the same things that Howie Carr is saying there. You have spoken with Jim Lyons in the last few months as we went through this last election. Is that the note that he's striking? Is that a fair summary?
It might be. I don't know. I honestly haven't spoken to him recently about this latest kerfuffle around the finances. I have spoken to Lyons a number of times over the years. I mean, I think probably the most recent conversation I had with him was leading up to the last election. And what stood out was his fervent and unapologetic embrace of Trump and the Trump wing of the party. He backed Jeff Deal, who was backed by Trump, for governor. Well, and that was fine with Maura Healey, who was happy to link Jeff Deal to Trump. You know, Lyons told me that President Biden was on the ballot in November and that voters would reject the Democrats because of inflation, a growing sense of economic uncertainty and reckless spending. Well, we know what happened. Maura Healey won overwhelmingly. And again, embracing sort of the Trump side of the Republican ledger just doesn't seem to be like good accounting, I guess. Good political accounting, to sort of extend that metaphor in a clumsy way.
All right. So we at least have a hash mark on January 31st. What are you going to be watching most closely, Anthony?
Well, I just think this debate within the Republican Party about how to rebuild, how to get back to a party that matters, that has consequence, that provides balance to a supermajority on Beacon Hill. I mean, I think that's good for democracy. I think it's good for Massachusetts. It'll be interesting to see how the Republican Party in Massachusetts tries to do that.
Okay. Anthony Brooks from here at WBUR. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
All right. So now we've a panel with panelists to break it down. It's Friday, folks. Sorry. Susan Tracy is former state representative and Democratic strategist, president of the strategy group, and Jennifer Nasur, former head of the Massachusetts Republican Party. Susan, welcome back.
Hey, Tiziana. Nice to see you.
Jennifer, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me.
So Anthony's kind of laid it out. I really do just want to start with reactions. And Jennifer, you are uniquely situated, having been in Jim Lyons's position. So let me start with your reactions.
Well, oh, God, I have so much to say. Number one, it's really sad, right? I'm going to start with it's very sad for democracy. Because to have a healthy democracy, you need to have a healthy two-party system. And what has happened here in Massachusetts is that we don't have that anymore, right? We're down to 25 members of a 200-member legislature that are Republicans. We have no statewide office holders, as Anthony was saying, no members of Congress. And so where's the representation? Because in Massachusetts, 56% of our electorate is actually unenrolled. You add that 9% to that, that is an overwhelming majority that are not Democrats. Yet the state is represented by all Democrats. So my first issue, and that breaks my heart for all of us, is the lack of democracy in Massachusetts at this time. So that's number one. Number two is the extreme tone deafness of Jim Lyons, of being a party chair who has made comments that he does not care about winning elections. That's like Bill Belichick saying he doesn't care about winning a football game. You know what? If you don't care about winning, move on and go find something else to do. He sells ice cream cones in the summer. He sells Christmas trees in the winter. That seems like a non-competitive sport that you should be involved in and not trying to win elections. And so for being a party chair, you have a very small, the list of things that you need to do is very short. You need to raise money. You need to field candidates, train those candidates, and win elections. I mean, that's pretty much it. He can't do any of that. He can't pay bills. He can't raise money. We had the most popular governor in the country. He feuded with him the whole time. He never used him to the benefit of the party to raise money, to get candidates, to train candidates. And so we are where we are now. And so we are at the bottom of the barrel. I don't know if the ship has sunk yet. I don't know if we're that low. I still think there is a little ways to go. If this guy is reelected, we're done. We're toast. And, you know, I mean, I think a lot of the good state committee members throw their hands up in the air and say, I'm done.
So, Susan Tracy, I'll turn to you. There's a lot there, but what I there really, is. Yeah. All right. You know what?
Tell us you really think, Jennifer.
Yeah. Okay. So just react. I was going to ask a question, but I can see the wheels turning. You just jump in.
Look, I'm not defending Jim Lyons. I mean, I want to say it that way. It's a tough road for Republicans in Massachusetts, period, right? 9% of the population. I go back over the years, and yes, the numbers keep dropping. But I remember in 2004, Mitt Romney fielded 137 candidates, right? He put $3 million into that election cycle, and the Republicans lost votes. They lost members. So it's an uphill climb. Let's be clear. This is not a Republican state. But what it is, and Jennifer spoke to this, it's 30% Dem, 9% Republican, and 60% independent. It's a moderate state when you get to the real vote in November.
You've done the brass
tacks. You are. It's a moderate state. It's a moderate election. There are pockets that are strong Ds in the urban centers, things like that.
And there's a swath that's strong R
right.
as well.
Yeah. Yeah, but it tends more D. Let's be honest, but it's definitely moderate. But where Republicans have been successful, and I'm going to even go back further than what Anthony talked about. I mean, look, we had Welt, we had Cellucci, we had Swift, we had Massachusetts Romney, and we had Baker. We've always had Republicans in a statewide office, and that's where I believe the Republican Party has been able to draw strength. I think it's harder in the legislature. It's just the reality. If you look at those numbers, they've dropped, but they're not like from some significant level. They were never that high in the first place. I served there. There's, you know, the minority party was a real minority party forever. But where the Republican Party has been able to have strength is with a statewide voice that was moderate. And if Jim Lyons continues, and look, I'm a Democrat, you know, keep going, you know, go on the 31st. But it's bad for the Republicans.
So I want to get now, I'm going to shift our gears a little bit and use this idea that Jennifer Nassour, you said about it. It's sad for democracy when you don't have healthy contest between opposing parties to hold each other accountable, et cetera. And I want to get into this question. We talked about the bill to the PI firm, but let's talk about what's underneath that, which is opposition research. And I have a couple of questions here. The first, Jennifer, is that pretty typical of state parties to fund opposition research in an election cycle?
I mean, we didn't when I was chair. I think that's more candidate campaign driven more than the state party. But, you know, I mean, it's not unusual. I think for that, a couple of things. Number one, he was doing opposition research on Maura Healey with Jeff Diehl. It wasn't even like, I don't know anyone who thought Jeff Diehl had a shot at winning against Maura Healey, right? He's a three-time loser now, lost a state Senate race, lost a U.S. Senate race, lost a governor's campaign. I don't know anyone who thought that this was even a close race. So $53,000 on opposition research seems like just blowing money up just for the sake of blowing it up. There's that. Then there's, you know, if anyone was going to do opposition research, it probably would have been done by the Democratic candidates that had a better shot against taking Healey out. And clearly, everyone dropped out before the election happened. So that would also lead me to think this wasn't a really good race to do any opposition research on. And then the stuff that the thing that had me on fire this week was he sent out an email, the Mass GOP sent out a fundraising email about the Globe story on Maura Healey and her lifestyle, trying to fundraise off of it. I found it completely offensive. I don't understand the day after he's hit with this complaint of not paying bills, he goes out and tries to fundraise off of the same thing that he used money for and collaborated with an independent expenditure PAC. The whole thing is so convoluted. It's like out of a political spy novel.
So let's pick that up for a minute and let me explain for listeners who may not be aware. Last weekend, Boston Globe columnist Yvonne Abraham exclusively revealed in a column a conversation with Maura Healey and her partner, with Healey revealing that she has had a partner, a romantic partner, for 2 years, and that that partner previously worked under Healey at the AG's office. And Healey said in the article that they did not have a relationship at the time, a romantic relationship at the time they were working together. I bring this up, Susan Tracy, for two reasons. One, the question of, what is the transparency obligation of a gubernatorial candidate, right? Because in a heavily contested race, somebody probably would have sought to do opposition research and pull out more information about Healey, her background, et cetera. So one, what's the transparency obligation there? And two, well, let's start with one. Right, go.
Well, you know, transparency obligation is a big word. Who's the transparency for? Is it for Maura? And it's a very different situation when you're talking about another person, her partner, and two children who are 9 and 7. So it might be great to say she should have come forward and told all these things, but it's not just about her. Other people are involved. And that's where I feel like you need to draw the line. You want someone to tell you about their life, but you have to recognize that there are other people who are part of that story, and maybe they don't want to be on the front page of the Boston Globe or talked about on WBUR on a Friday morning. So I respect that people can decide how to talk about their family and the people around it, especially when there are children involved, on their own terms and not on the terms of what someone else wants to know. It plays no role in her job as governor. It plays no role in her job as attorney general. And I think she should be able to decide when she talks about things. And I would go further to say, if the Republican Party was paying money to do opposition research on her lifestyle, that tells me that they were planning to use that as a gotcha and to hurt her. And if I'm Maura Healey, and I think people in my life can be hurt by that, I'm going to do everything I can to protect them. So, you know, be damned if people have a problem with that.
I'm going to stay with this and vet this 1 minute longer, and then we're going to go back to the state party. So we've heard Susan's position there. I want to note a piece in the Boston Globe from earlier this week by Joan Vanacki, Jennifer Nasur, who says, now the question is, how much scrutiny should they expect going forward? Looking back at coverage of the last two male governors, a lot. And the standard is fickle. So I'm going to play a little bit of sound here. First, this is Lieutenant Governor Karen Pulido and Governor Charlie Baker in their first inaugurations.
And to my husband, Steve, and Bobby and Judy would agree, is the best dad ever. I think. Thank you for your tremendous support, because without it, I would not be standing here today. Thank you, Steve. I love you.
I especially want to thank my wife, Lauren. For her love, for her counsel, for her sense of humor, and her endless support.
And then here's Healey last week.
I thank my family, many of whom are with me in this chamber today, and so many teachers, coaches, mentors, and friends who are in my heart.
And I want to note, Governor Deval Patrick did not name Diane Patrick by name or thank her by name as his wife. So two things there. I'm staying with this for a minute longer because I've got two women on a panel from different parties, and the question has been raised. We talked about the transparency question, now the sexist coverage question. Do you agree with Susan Tracy, Jennifer? This is just nobody's business.
I absolutely do. And I'll tell you, I'm divorced and I have children, and I've run for office, and my family and my lifestyle should be no one else's business. And so I don't care if you're married, if you're single, if you're in a relationship, whatever you consider your status, that's your personal business. And if you would like to bring that up and you want to bring it out to light. I think that that's totally fine. That's your personal prerogative. But I don't think that that should be the standard, because I think that if we do that, as it is now, politics is so disgusting that so many people on either side don't want to be engaged. They don't want to run for office, which is why we see the characters that we have out running for office out there. And so if we start prying into people's personal life and what they're doing, this relationship she has is 2 years old. I mean, if we all go through every relationship we had that went 2 years and a day and then ended.
Yeah, let's please not
right,
do that.
Right. So, right. I mean, no one wants to do that. So if we want to start looking into everyone's dirty underwear, let's go for it. But, you know, I think it's really opening up a Pandora's box that no one wants to go down.
Okay, last question for each of you, Susan Tracy, Jennifer Nasur, our panel here, as we look at the state of the state GOP this week here on Radio Boston. We're diving beneath the headlines. Jennifer, you said that if current party chair Jim Lyons gets reelected in the election on January 31st, party's done. So say for a moment he does not, and one of the other contenders wins. Susan Tracy, can the party just pick up and move on?
No, there's a ton of rebuilding that has to happen in that party. They have to clean up the debt. They have to try to reorient what their platform and issues are about. And they have to give people some comfort that it's a place that you'd want to come back to come to.
And Jennifer Nasur, the first piece of advice you would give if someone else takes over that party, having sat in that chair yourself?
I would say you need a really good, solid plan to go to donors first and say, listen, new day, new chair. Here's what my strategy is to win elections come 2023 in local elections, 2024 in the legislature. Moving on, here's what we're going to do. And I need for you to believe in me, because I think the first thing and one of the first things I did was I went to all those donors that were disenchanted and said to them, please put your faith in me. I promise I'm going to do what I tell you I'm going to do. And I think any one of the other candidates will be able to do that other than Lyons. Lyons has absolutely no respect from donors. He has no respect from anyone who has run for office previously, who has won, who has been involved, and from at least half of the state committee.
All right. Jennifer Nasur is former head of the Massachusetts Republican Party, founder and president of the Pocketbook Project, which supports center-right women for elected office. Susan Tracy is a former state representative, a Democratic strategist, and president of the Strategy Group. Susan, thanks.
Thanks, Tiziana.
Jennifer, thanks.
Thank you so much.